Good morning. Good to see you here this morning. Yeah, you're much better to look at than these empty seats. So I'm glad I'm here this morning as we look at Jonah chapter 2. And I would really feel good if you had could all tell me that you had read Jonah chapter 2 in preparation for this morning, at least a couple times this week. I'd feel even better maybe if you had read that and answered the questions in the connection booklet, which some of you did, I know. But if you all did, that would really make my day. And hopefully, if you were somewhere else last Sunday, like I was, you've taken time to go to the website and listen to Pastor Mark's sermon. This is an important part of the book of Jonah. It's called Prayer and Deliverance, although, as we'll see, there's very little prayer and a lot of talk about prayer. Perhaps the least well-known part of the book of the story of Jonah, chapter 2. So we're going to look at Jonah chapter 2, as you already guessed. Before we do, let's pray. Father, we thank you for your word. It takes many forms. There are songs that we can sing. There are stories. There's history. There's sermons. There's very deep teaching. But it all works together to let us know who you are, to know our relationship to you. And as we look at Jonah, familiar as it is, I pray that you would help us to understand the lessons that you have for us to learn from Jonah, from you, from the whole situation. And Father, as we come before you this morning and we go to your word, as we seek your face, we know that we come from many different situations in which we have lived this week. And for some, it's been a very tough time. The loss of a friend, deep hurt, questions, perhaps some sickness, perhaps a visit with someone that we were looking forward to that didn't happen. Just a nagging pain that we have always, seems like always. And regardless of our situation, as I told the kids, regardless of the situation, we can talk to you and we can find you enough. We just sang, I need you, oh, I need you. There are so many situations in which we need you. It may be for a loved one who's going through recovery from an accident. It may be many different things that we're just sort of wondering, why, Lord? How come now? What's this? How are we going to get through this? I pray, Father, that you would calm our hearts, that you would speak to us where we are. And if we come from a week where everything's gone just like we wished, just like we prayed for, thank you for that too. That in those times, you speak to us and you work in us and you accomplish your purposes as you do in the difficult times. So we thank you for the opportunity of looking at your word this morning. In Jesus' name, amen. And if you're able, would you please stand and read with me chapter 2 of the book of Jonah. It will be on the board, okay? It is from the ESV. You don't have to read it from there. You have your own Bible, that's fine. But join me with this as we read. Then Jonah prayed to the Lord his God from the belly of the fish, saying, I called out to the Lord out of my distress, and he answered me. Out of the belly of Sheol I cried, and you heard my voice. For you cast me into the deep, into the heart of the seas, and the flood surrounded me. All your waves and your billows passed over me. Then I said, I am driven away from your sight, Yet I shall again look upon your holy temple. The waters closed in over me to take my life. The deep surrounded me. Weeds were wrapped about my head at the roots of the mountains. I went down to the land whose bars closed upon me forever. Yet you brought up my life from the pit, O Lord my God. When my life was fainting away, I remembered the Lord, and my prayer came to you in your holy temple. Those who pay regard to vain idols forsake their hope of steadfast love. But I, with the voice of thanksgiving, will sacrifice to you. What I have vowed, I will pay. Salvation belongs to the Lord. And the Lord spoke to the fish, and it vomited Jonah out upon the dry land. Thank you. You may be seated, and may God add his blessing to his word. Now, if you read the introduction to Jonah that was in the Connections booklet, or if you read elsewhere, you may be aware that Jonah is a drama in two acts with two scenes in each act. Both acts begin with the same words to Jonah: arise and go to Nineveh. Then the story proceeds, and then it's back to that same situation for Acts 2, not the book of Acts, but Act 2, scene 1. Arise and go to Nineveh. We have just read Act 1, scene 2. Verse 7 of the first chapter actually sets the stage for this scene. And as you are aware, it is God who is directing the drama. He is the one changing the scenery. He changes it from the backdrop of a buffeted ship on a wild sea with the wind blowing and everything huge scenery. And he changes it now to the next scene, which is enclosed. The tummy of a big fish. Pretty drastic change in scenery. Jonah, tossed from the sinking ship into the sea, is rescued from drowning by being swallowed whole by a large fish. When we had discussion about this in the first session we had of Connections, Rudy asked the question, why do we make such a big deal about it being a miracle that he was swallowed by a fish? We don't make a big deal about the storm being stormy and the storm stopping. But the fact is, there are lots of records of people being swallowed by fish. And on one occasion, they found the remains of a man completely dressed in a coat of mail. So maybe it was rusty, but anyway, it was there in the fish when it was caught and dissected. So we know that there are fish that can do it. We know that there are certain whales, maybe the right whale, even though most whales have a small throat. But he's saved from drowning by being swallowed by a big fish. And I'm tempted to say maybe you are too, saying, yeah, he's rescued. What kind of rescue is this? Now I'm in the belly of a fish. But it sets the scene for the next stage in Jonah's life, in his journey. As Pastor Mark pointed out last week, this is the history of a real man swallowed by a real fish that Jesus refers to as a true, actual story. In fact, Jesus even says that the people of Nineveh, to whom Jonah finally preached, were going to stand up in the day of judgment and condemn the people that listened to Jesus because they believed Jonah and the people listening to Jesus didn't believe him. So the story isn't even finished yet. Still has another scene afterwards. So here's the setting. Okay, this is the setting. And the Lord appointed a great fish to swallow up Jonah. And Jonah was in the belly of the fish 3 days and three nights. Pretty matter of fact. That's where we are today. The scene was set verse 17 of the first chapter. And in the second chapter, which we read together, we find the response of that erstwhile prophet, the runaway prophet, running from God. And what does he do when he hits this scene? Then Jonah prayed to the Lord his God from the belly of the fish. No prelude, no lead up. He's in the fish, then he prayed. Somehow or other, this turn of events brings out the best in the prophet. He has changed his perspective. The rebel is now repentant. He remembers who he is, and he remembers who God is. Or maybe he remembers who he is because he remembers who God is. In the stomach of the fish, for his very own sin, he prays. And it says he prays to his God. Matthew Henry reminds us there is no place amiss for prayer. Doesn't matter where you are, prayer is always in order. Wherever you are, God is open to hear our prayers, even from the belly of a fish. Earlier, the captain had awakened Jonah from sleep aboard the ship. But now, God awakens him from a much deeper spiritual sleep. He awakens him from his running, and he responds in prayer. God wakes him up, not because he's in the deep of a ship, but because he's out of fellowship with God himself. So this situation calls Jonah to a much deeper relationship to God. This is a place of punishment, but a place of rescue. And sometimes, that's the way it is. The place of rescue is our place of punishment. That God allows what we want to do to happen, and when it happens, we realize that really isn't what we wanted anyway. And it's a place of rescue. So even after his rebellion, he's quick to pray. And he calls, it says he prayed to his God. Even after his rebellion, he realized that God was his God. Not just a God, but his God. Running away, but God's still his God. And he gave up on God. He wasn't going to do what God wanted, but God, he knows, is still God. And he's still his God. You know, just like the prodigal son. He ran away. He didn't want anything to do with his father. He didn't, you know, that lifestyle, never mind. But when he got to the end of himself and came to his senses, his statement wasn't, I will go and find a father. He says, I will return to my father. He still knew that relationship. And Jonah still knows this relationship, but he prays to his father. And it's not any neat little prayer chamber. G. Vernon McGee, the preacher, talked about when he was a kid reading a children's storybook about Jonah. And the accompanying picture in the storybook had a picture of Jonah sitting on a chair with a table and a lamp on it. Not so, so not so. It would be dark, smelly, damp, disgusting. It's no place like home. I mean, that would be no place like home. But it brought about a reality check in Jonah. Maybe he thought he would die when he was tossed out into the sea. Maybe that's what he wanted. He would really run away from God. He would be gone. But here he is, and he's awakened to his need of the very God he was running away from. And he prayed. He didn't mourn. He didn't go into denial. He didn't make excuses. He wasn't depressed. He was grieved in a large way, but he prayed. He prayed to the God that he knew, the God that he knew is a God gracious, full of mercy, slow to anger, abounding in steadfast love, and willing to relent of disaster. Now, you may recall in a previous sermon some time ago, I quoted a Jewish scholar who had one of his blog readers say, well, as a Jew, I wish we had a kinder God. Because the God of the Old Testament, the Jewish God, is hard and he's a tyrant. And so this scholar says, not so. That's the God the Christians tell us we have. But we know that our God is a God of compassion, who's gracious and full of mercy, slow to anger, abounding in steadfast love. We know that's our God. That's the God that Jonah knew, if you look at chapter 4, verse 2. He knew who that was. And so in this time of trouble, he returns to that loving God. He was running away from the presence of God, but when he says, you cast me out from your sight, he discovered that being away from the presence of God wasn't really where he wanted to be. We're not told immediately what he prayed. In fact, we're told very little about what he prayed. He talks about his prayer, and he talks about the situation of his prayer and what happened because of his prayer, but there's only about one line, one verse, that actually tells us, with quotation mark, this is something that he prayed. But he's telling the story. He tells us what he thought about prayer. He tells us what he thought about the situation. And he tells us he called out while in distress, out of the belly of Sheol. It says he cried. So one says he called. The other says he cried. But he says God answered him in one case and God heard his prayer in the other. Although the answer had not yet come, he's still just asking God. But he talks as if he speaks in the past. You did this. You heard me. You answered me. And he's just making the prayer. There's this amazing faith as he talks about his prayer as if, well, it's already done. He talks about the belly of the fish as being the belly of death, the belly of the forgotten place, of being Sheol. And some of his picturesque language in these verses comes from his knowledge of the Psalms. There's only a few verses there where he's talking, telling us the story or telling us what God did. But there are at least seven quotes and or allusions to the Psalms. The whole prayer is made of things that you can actually read in the Psalms, not always according to him. But his prayer, he makes use of what he knew, the Psalms, the worship songs that we call the Psalms. You know, in times of problem is often the time when the scriptures and the worship songs and the hymns and the spiritual songs that we are aware of impact us anew. We remember what we sang. We remember what we read in the scriptures. And they inform our prayers, or they inform how we react in our situation. He acknowledges that he was in the deep because of God. Now he calls him his God, but he says, you cast me into the deep, into the heart of the seas. The flood surrounded me, and all your waves and your billows passed over me. There's no doubt in Jonah's mind who did this. The fish didn't just happen. The word in the ESV is appointed. There may have been a whole school of fish, but one was appointed to swallow him. There may have only been one fish there. God just sent him on an errand. But he says, you did it. You did it. He calls the waves, the billows, God's very own. Your waves came past me. Your billows passed over me. But as we go further, he not only sees it's the hand of God, but he realizes it's his rebellion himself. You'll see that in a further verse. This is not just a capricious act on God's part. This is in direct punishment of his rebellion. Heard a story once about a college student who was going through a difficult time. And he's talking to, I think it was a Campus Crusades counselor. And he said, I was going through a rough time, so I went to see Professor so-and-so. And I said to him, do you suppose that this is God punishing me? And the counselor's heart sank, and he thought, oh, he went and saw that professor. He'd probably say, no, no, that's just the way life is. But he says, the professor said to me, well, that's what the Bible tells us. If you disobey, God's going to punish you. He's going to put you through problems. And that's exactly what happened here, and it happens to us on occasion. Fortunately, he doesn't put us through difficult times every time, or else we'd never be out of difficult times. As I read verses 2 and 3 and 5, 4 has a little different tone to it, but as I read it, it seemed to me to speak of his desperation, his hopelessness. It smacks of despair, of drowning, of suffocation. And if you have a little bit or a great deal of a problem with being closed in, maybe you read it even with more feeling. The waters are closing in to take his life. The deep surrounds him. The weeds are wrapped around his head. He's so far down in the deep that the roots of the mountains are there, and the bars of death and of Sheol are closing in on him. The grave. Jonah cries, he says, in his distress, because he has been driven out of God's sight. Enough to strike terror into anyone's heart. Yet in the midst of all the angst and the distress and the fear, Jonah trusts God. God's doing a work here. I don't think this is just, well, Jonah was such a great guy. We have some other events that show that maybe he wasn't. But God's at work, giving him confidence in him and in his word. He says, as he prayed, God answered him. God heard his voice. And in verse 4, which I just skipped, he acknowledges that while he had been driven from God's sight, yet he will again look upon God's temple in Jerusalem. Now, I don't know how much faith you have, but he's here in this belly of a fish, and he says, now I'm out of God's sight. He's driven me away, but I'm still going to go back to see the temple. That's quite a statement of faith. He has confidence in God, even in the act of praying in desperation. I would be desperate too, I think. But look at the explanation of how this can be. In verse 7 and the following verses. When my life was fainting away, I remembered the Lord, and my prayer came to you in your holy temple. He was in the belly of the fish. His prayer reached God's holy temple. Then he says, those who pay regard to vain idols forsake their hope of steadfast love. Maybe here he's sort of thinking of those sailors aboard the ship, everybody calling on their own God, and nothing happening. But he's not like that. He says, but I, with the voice of thanksgiving, will sacrifice to you. What I have vowed, I will pay. Salvation belongs to the Lord. And that's why he could say with confidence in verse 6, that even when he went down to the land whose bars were closing in on him forever, that God brought his life back from the pit. There are some, I don't agree with them, that think this means that he actually died in this process. There's nothing in the scriptures to suggest that, except that he is the sign for Jesus' resurrection after death after 3 days. But he knew that the bars that were going to hold him forever could not hold him because he believed in God as he prayed. Like us, in a time of distress, Jonah remembered a lot of different things. But the key to it all is found at the end of verse 9, which we just read. Salvation belongs to the Lord. That was the heart of what he thought. By the way, that's a direct quotation also from the worship song, which we call the Psalms. How good it is to be able to look back at the scriptures and to our worship and find hope and confidence that we need in a time of trouble. It was this that caused Jonah to repent and to trust God and to pray with confidence. It was remembering that God would help him to renew his, not only to renew his vows, but to bring them about. Here he's in the belly of the fish, and he's saying, I'm going to fulfill my vows. How in the world can he say that? Well, because he knows his God. He knows that God is able, and God is giving him this confidence. He was not like those who looked to idols. He had every hope of God's steadfast love for him. And just as chapter 1 ended in verse 13 and set the stage for the next scene, so now verse 10 of chapter 2 sets the stage for Act 2, scene 1, chapter 3, which we will look at next week. What an amazing thing happens here that prepares Jonah and us for the next part of his journey. And it's just, you know, there's no fanfare. It's just, and the Lord spoke to the fish and it vomited Jonah out upon dry land. Just the way it is. God spoke to him. Fish obeyed. Jonah's safe. Now there's no timeline here in chapter 2, nor is there in verse 1 verse 17. All we know is that between 1:17 and 2:10, there were 3 days and three nights, or parts of 3 days and three nights, because in Jewish terms, a day and a night can be a complete day and night, or it can be a part of a day and night that stands for the whole. Don't ask me why they do that, but they do it. So it's probably during the third day that he spit out onto dry land. And we don't know whether Jonah prayed on the ship before he got thrown overboard. As Pastor Mark mentioned last week, there's no record of him saying anything beyond, yeah, I'm the one to blame. My God is the one doing this. Throw me overboard and you'll be safe. And they're all calling out to their gods and they're rowing like crazy. Jonah doesn't seem to be doing anything. Was he praying? We have no record of that. We don't know if he was praying when he was airborne or when he landed in the sea before the fish caught him. When did he start praying? We know that he was in the fish for a long time. And the prayer that we find is very brief. And when did he pray it? I would imagine it was immediately when he arrived in the belly of the fish or on the way there. It says he did it in the belly of the fish, so we have to take that. I think it's most likely that he did it immediately because most of the time he would have been in the fish, he would have been out of commission, more or less. It's not conducive to being of a clear mind. But what changed Jonah's mind? I would think it was the provision of a fish. Maybe he thought he was just going to die when he got thrown into the water, and here this fish gets him and saves his life. Apparently he was not afraid to die. But when God saved him, he was overcome by God's mercy shown to him. Whatever the timing, whether he prayed right away or just before being spit out, we don't know, but he prayed before it was too late. He repented before it was too late, and God showed him the mercy that he needed. But there is the time element there. What is the time element? It seems to be thrown in almost without much thought. God kept Jonah alive in the whale, in the fish for 3 days and three nights. And the only reason for that we know, would be because it's a type of Jesus being resurrected from the dead. And types are very important to God. Very important to God. When you remember Moses, he was told to strike the rock and he did, and it gave water. And then the second time he was told to speak to the rock and he didn't. He hit it again with the rod. And God said, well, you're not going into the promised land. Sorry. Why? Because he marred the image of the rock, Jesus Christ, that was only struck once, not twice. And it was strong enough in God's sight to say, no, you don't get to go. You go up in the mountain, have a good look, but you're not going to get to go. God hates divorce. Sure, he hates it because kids get hurt, because it ruins the ultimate basis of society. But he hates it most because it ruins, it mars the image of Christ and his church and the perfect wedding, the perfect marriage. Types are important. So God kept him there for 3 days and three nights so that this type could be used. There's another element of time that makes sense to me. May or may not make sense to you. There's another one that says 3 days bathed in the digestive juices of a fish would be long enough for Jonah's appearance to have been greatly changed. And he wouldn't be able to get over it in a day or two of sitting in the sun. People who have been swallowed by fish were very much washed out. They were bleached. So perhaps, I'm only saying perhaps, this was what Jesus meant when he says that Jonah was assigned to the people of Nineveh. We know that his being 3 days in the belly of the fish is for sure a sign, a type of what Jesus did. But he also says in Luke chapter 11, verses 29 and 30 and verse 32, this generation is an evil generation. It seeks for a sign, but no sign will be given to it except the sign of Jonah. For as Jonah became a sign to the people of Nineveh, so will the Son of Man be to this generation. The men of Nineveh will rise up at the judgment with this generation and condemn it, for they repented at the preaching of Jonah. Behold, something greater than Jonah is here. So Jonah somehow was a sign to Nineveh. And perhaps that's why they paid attention to him when this foreigner shows up in town and starts crying his message. And then the fish spit Jonah up on the dry land. The dry land is usually considered to be Jonah's own home country or nearby so that he could go home. I don't know. I don't think he would go home first. I think he would get a good bath and change his clothes and make sure he didn't smell quite like fish guts or whatever was mentioned this morning, so that he would be presentable. So after all this adventure, we're sort of back to square one. Except everything has changed. He has committed himself to fulfilling his duty. He would keep his ministry vows. He was in a new devotion to God, to whom salvation belongs. And the stage is set for chapter 3, Act 2, Scene 1, next week. One of the reasons for preaching on Jonah is that the New Testament tells us the Old Testament is there for our sake, for our instruction. So we're supposed to learn from this. Another reason for studying is that most people don't know the story of Jonah as much as they think they do. They know the broad outlines and they got some mistakes in that. But anyway, what can we take home from this amazing story? But a huge event. I want you to tell me. I would like you to take a couple of minutes and talk with your neighbors. What can we learn? What can we take home from this story? And in about a minute or two, so get talking. A minute or two, I'll close my message, okay? So, talk to each other. You were talking greatly before the service. Talk for a few minutes here. What can we learn from this story of chapter 2, Jonah's prayer and his deliverance? I hear the ebb and flow sort of rising and falling here, but anyway. There are many things that we can take home from this. Anybody like to suggest one aloud that you've talked about this morning? What can we take away from this? What about the disobedience? What do we take home from it?
Picture of salvation.
Picture of salvation.
Our disobedience, and yet God rescues us.
Okay.
You can't escape.
There's more than one can't escape in this session, in that story. You can find God wherever you go as long as you listen. God has a big plan. Does he let us get in the way? Yeah, for a while. Never give up on your faith. God will not be mocked, okay? God is with you. Well, as I said, there are many understandings. God takes care of his own. He doesn't give up on us. He's ready to forgive. And sometimes he takes us into deep waters to accomplish his purposes. But nothing's too difficult for God to overcome. Not even his people's rebellion, among other things. That familiarity with the scriptures and with our worship processes, hymns and songs and prayers and worship together, are a great resource for prayer and for following God. It doesn't matter what you've done. When you turn to God in obedience, he is still your faithful God. Our God. A God of gracious, full of mercy, slow to anger, abounding in steadfast love, and willing to relent, Jonah says, of disaster, like for Nineveh, but for his punishment. Say, how long is he going to be down there in the fish? Forever! 3 days. He's willing to relent of punishment. And again, it came out already. Any place can be a place of prayer when you turn to God in faith. May we learn as we continue on in the book of Jonah. And make sure that we don't require God to stick us in places like this because we obey him regularly.